OPN Ask an Angel podcasts are conversations with global angel investors and venture capitalists. We explore how to invest, understanding investment strategies and approaches to due diligence. Join us and learn what it takes to be a startup or what it takes to invest in the next great company.
Welcome to the Supporters Fund Ask an Investor. I'm your host, Jeffrey Poffin. Let's please welcome Daniel Zhu, general partner at the New Billionaires Club as our investor for today. Welcome, Daniel. It's a real pleasure having you join us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm pretty excited, Daniel, because I get excited about everybody I get to interview because I really enjoy the conversation and being able to deep dive into the backgrounds of the investors, especially the investors in this early stage that are really making a big impact in the world. And the way we like to start our show is we like to dive right into it, learn a bit about yourself, and then we have a whole genre of questions that we can dive into. But because you and I have a bit of a background, you guys have been running events. I had the opportunity of being part of one of your events a few weeks ago. There's just lots of exciting things that we can talk about. So I'm ready to jump off and get into this and really deep dive into everything, Daniel, and what you guys are up to, because it's pretty exciting. And being part of that makes it even more exciting. So to start, if you could share a little bit about your background all the way back to your U of T days, you can talk about IBM, all the great things that you've done, and then one thing about you that nobody would know.
All right, Jeffrey. Yes. So for me, I was an engineer by training. I studied computer engineering at U of T. So that was, I graduated 10 years ago, and my first job was very different compared to my peers. So my first job was at venture capital, doing hardware, VC research analysis. And that's how I got my career started. So VC was my first job, and I was the only one in the company who actually knew what's going on with hardware. I guess they were looking at one company, right? Which was about to replace all this silicon in chips. And that was pretty huge promise. And they were trying to take off. So that's how I got started by accident. But then I fell in love with ventures and with startups in general. So after a year, I started my own company called Multan International. It's an e-commerce platform that sold high-end Asia consumer products to North American customers. So that went well. And I exited the next year. It didn't become unicorn, but we made a decent money. And then I joined IBM as a senior product manager. So at that time, I spent around 4 years as a senior product manager at IBM Cloud, and then went to Columbia MBA just to polish my skills in business, because I want to go back to the venture world. And after looking at the VC, after looking from a startup point of view, and after looking at from a corporate point of view, I kind of got what I was interested in. So immediately after my MBA at Columbia, I could not resist going back to the startup world. So I started my second company in 2020 called Space, SPAICE. And you can guess it's an AI-empowered space design software. So at that time, I was a CTO, and we started the company with much better preparedness. And we got $2 million investment eventually from Alibaba, and it took off pretty well. Right now, it's still thriving. I left the company, and now I'm an advisor to the company because after 2 to 3 years, I find, okay, maybe it's time to give back to the startup world. And that's why I'm starting an incubator called New Billionaires Club, and also a VC firm, New Billionaires Capital, to help other people. Although I am not a billionaire, but I believe we will have billionaires in our incubator and in our incubated firms in the future.
Awesome. That's an amazing background.
Thank you for sharing that and diving into it. But before we start to dive into the layers, can you share one thing about you that nobody would know?
One thing about myself. Nobody would know that, even my wife.
I'm okay with that. Whatever you think is worth sharing, by all means. Yeah, it's more of just ways for people to relate and say, wow, you can hold your breath underwater for 6 minutes. Anything's feasible, whatever it is that's cool that people would want to know.
Okay. I love romantic novels. That's that's the only thing, like, I don't want to admit to other people. Like, I love movies like Titanic, okay? And romantic novels, and people normally don't believe.
Ah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's a whole different side. Like, you're in business, you're an engineer, you're a techie, but you've got a strong emotional connection to good literature that has a good storyline to it. So taking Titanic or any of the other ones like that. So, like, a Daniel Steeles, I think, is a famous author in this space. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Maybe not Daniel Steeles is more in a mystery, but either way, I'm sure there's some side of that to it, but that's pretty exciting.
Yes. Yeah. And that helps with picking movies with my wife, you know. We don't have a conflict there.
Fair. That's a good point. Yeah, yeah. There'd be some aligns right there, aligning to it. That's pretty cool. That's a great great thing. Very very few people probably even know that they align to that, but that's good. You're in touch with your inner self. So that's brilliant. Great share.
Yeah.
So we'll kind of go back to, which I find really amazing, is that when you first started your career and you started off at U of T working in the software engineer space, when you first came out, you landed in a venture role. Can you share a little bit about what you gained from that venture role? Because it obviously over the last 10 years gave you a really strong perspective of what it takes to be an entrepreneur, what it takes to be in this space. You got first line understanding while working as an analyst in the hardware space, meeting with founders, understanding the problems they were trying to solve. Is that what kind of triggered you to start creating your own companies and move forward in that space? Or was there something else that kind of triggered all that?
Yeah, great question. So a little bit background. Before I started my first real job, I did my internship at AMD as a hardware tester for 16 months. And I guess that experience was captured by one of the venture capital called Pine Tree Capital back in 2014. So I really love coding. Like, I was actually a very good coder. And for my final milestone year, I did an app. It's a multi-people game. Basically, it's an online game, and you can play with your cell phone. But I have way too many ideas. And to be frank with you, Jeffrey, I was not sure which career path I should pursue at that time. So I thought to myself, okay, maybe my KPI is to look at 100 companies. And what's the best way to do that for free? It's probably to join a VC. So I only looked at a VC and the PE opportunities. And you know, the interesting thing about that is that you don't get a lot of competition if you are an engineering student, because all of your peers, they are looking at, back then was IBM, Cisco, I think Amazon was not that big, Google, of course, but VC, I don't think people, because people look for jobs sometimes given the peer pressure, right? But I don't have any this kind of peer pressure. So I just kind of stumbled into the VC world. And after I'm in the VC world, it's, as you said, it's a battlefield. So every single day, I got to, you know, meet with 2 to 3 founders. Sometimes I go to their company, sometimes they with our office. And to my surprise, they were very convinced what they were doing. Although I was not that convinced. Like, my job was to just question them. Like, how is that even possible? Like, you're talking about replacing Intel and AMD and NVIDIA at the same time using this new material. But most of them had this very ambitious idea with 100 times return potentially. if everything goes well. And just so convinced, so confident. And that actually got me into this kind of mindset. It's like, so for that year, I look at about 500 companies, and we end up investing, I think, 5 to 6 in the tech industry. One of them went IPO. So that's back in 2014. And that company was Sphere 3D, which was a cloud company. It's like Google Cloud, but earlier than that. So after 1 year, after looking at so many companies, I thought to myself, it was not that hard actually to start a company, because I saw a lot of great founders and I saw some average founders. But eventually, once you know the game, it's not that hard to raise money. So at that time, I had a couple of good ideas, and I just called up my buddies from U of T and say, hey, do you want to start a company in e-commerce space? Because that's a place we knew very well, and that's space we got in connections as well from supply chain side. And so we just started the company and tried to raise money. That's my first 2 years after graduation, which I really appreciate at this time.
So taking that, those first 2 years before you kind of really dived into making your first business, what were a couple of learnings that you gained from it? And I can point out one that I really liked, and I'm going to, the comment you made, and I'll dive into that in a second. But is there one or two points that really stood out around the founders or the businesses that they were creating that really ensured when you move forward in your next company that you wrote these on a wall or you wrote them on a piece of paper and said, make sure you do this? Was it make sure you have the best financials, or was it make sure you have the problem defined? What did you learn? Because you already investigated 500 companies to only invest in 5. So what were the details that really stuck to you? Because you said you weren't convinced and they were convincing. So what were the things that stood out that said, make sure you have this when you create your first company?
Right. So if I have to stick with one thing, is that you are the most knowledgeable person in the room, basically anywhere. So say if you want to start a hardware company and you want to do chips, you are probably the most knowledgeable person about chips. Either you are a PhD in semiconductor from, I don't know, Ivy League school, or you can be a senior researcher from NVIDIA, from Intel. And that kind of convinced me, but I have to talk to you, right? And I can expand that a little bit. So see, this person, he was a professor and a PhD at U of T, about 50 years old, and studied semiconductor for 30 years. And we still did very thorough due diligence on this guy. And we visited his lab in Pennsylvania. From a hardware background myself, I was not that experienced, but at least I had some basics. So we would just have conversations. And I would ask my friends in AMD, in NVIDIA, just to check about this idea. Because I don't think it's fair for investors. As a venture capitalist, it's not fair to invest in someone, because at that early stage, you invest in people who is not the most knowledgeable person on that topic. So that's a minimal threshold for me.
I like that, because what you're doing is you're saying that if you want to create a business and you want to be good at it, be the best. Make sure you're the best at that most proficient skill, if it's in chips and semiconductors or if it's in software, whatever it is you're building, make sure that you know the ins and outs and you're the smartest person in the room, because those are the things that are going to help you gain value from other investors, get investors, and build a stronger team. It's having that background knowledge. Is that fair to share?
Yeah, or at least have someone on your team, right? So I got this, like you need to have a very good salespeople. That's fine, very good marketing people. But at least for a tech company, you should have someone who is the most knowledgeable person about this topic on your team. That's fair to say.
I like that. No, and that's great news, because I think when people build companies, I think sometimes they go into completely new domains and they spend a lot of time trying to convince people they understand it. when they probably could just share a little bit of an insert about their background or what they know or what they've tried to learn so that they can become that new, strong, knowledgeable person in that space. And they have to convince people. And you, one of the lines that you said, which was very fascinating, you were saying is that they were very convincing.
Yes.
But you weren't so much convinced. Can you share a little bit more about that? Because I find that fascinating, because that's what we experience every day. A lot of founders are coming to us trying to convince us that they have got the best new bells and whistles, new product, new service, whatever that might be, and that they need money so that they can take this to the moon and really generate a lot of value. And they have to convince you. And at the end of the day, they're convinced themselves that they have this. So maybe there's some advice you have on founders where they can kind of, maybe do they need to shift their mindset? Do they need to be more adopting to their investors? Do they need to understand that their investors may not believe them right away? Like, what things do you think are missing in this whole scope when you've got a founder coming to you that is, you know, they're drinking their own juice. They think this is the best product in the world. And you're on the other end of the table going, I don't see it. Something's missing here. So what do they need to do better in order to achieve that with you?
Right. Great question, Jeffrey. So for me, I've been at both sides of the table, right? So I've been pitching to VCs and I've been the venture capitalist. It's okay, just twofold. So the first fold is that, is it real? Like, do you really think your product is the best in the world? I would say 50-50. So 50% people don't really think so. Like, they say they're gonna be the next Facebook, they're gonna be the next Google. Okay, that's possible, but do you really believe in that? And second, and the other 50% people I met was really good at what they're doing. They can actually be the best, at least in a vertical. And I say that it's very hard to be best in the tech world. Like, what is the best in the tech world? Is it ChatGPT? Is it Google? Very hard. You have to define your vertical. So you say, I'm the best at, you know, making, helping semiconductor manufacturers draw their diagrams, draw their you know, chip diagrams. Okay, that's very niche market. And you say you're the best, you probably got like 20 other people doing that. So that's possible. But you say I'm the best at, you know, making chips, I'm gonna replace Intel. You gotta be more specific. So I would say, like, make your scope a little bit more specific. And advice to the founders is that it's like, how do you convince other people you are doing the best? I like, fundamentally, I believe most founders, they sincerely believe what they are doing is the best, but sometimes due to the lack of experience, sometimes due to the lack of knowledge, they don't see the whole picture. So I would ask them to challenge themselves and surrounded by opinions that are not consistent with theirs. So they need to talk to industry experts, talk to their mentors, especially for younger founders, talk to your professor to say if it's legit. I love founders who come with their professor. They convince their professor to join their team. That's a very good sign, right? But if everybody's saying, so if a lot of people are saying things against your original idea, maybe it's time to pivot. And nothing wrong about pivoting. We can go to that route for a longer time. But what I'm trying to say is that most companies I see successful pivoted 3 to 5 times at least. So always believe. So if you really believe you are the best, say the reasons. Like, it can be experience, it can be your education, it can be a lot of stuff. But sincerely believe in that, and then start from there. Don't be afraid.
Now, this is good, and I do like that you said you come from two sides. You're analyzing this as a venture capitalist, but you're also analyzing it on how you sold through to businesses and to raise funds. So you're playing both sides, but you're taking that years of experience to say these are the approaches you should use. And if you're going to be the best, you should tie in mentors and advisors, but have those people also support you so that they kind of help elevate your game by proving that you're the best, because you're getting even the better, more educated, longer tenure out there, and you're having them kind of prop you up at the same time.
That's right. That's right. I saw so many startups that they started, and it's a final year project, and they got their professor as a co-founder. That's a very good sign, to be honest. Because if a professor wants to do this full time with you with 30 extra years of experience, yeah, you're probably doing something right.
Hey, that's well shared. I like that. You also mentioned that the founders are very ambitious on their returns, and that they have this real strong confidence to them. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Okay, I'm gonna answer this question in my own experience. Okay, so if you are, that certainly is confidence and overconfidence, right? So for me, really depends on your personality. Like, for example, if someone who is not confident normally, I would sometimes stereotype this, like if you are from engineering background and you're kind of shy, introvert, but when you talk about your project, you're passionate, you're very confident. But when I drink coffee with you, when we talk about movies and novels, you're not confident, or you're not day-to-day, not confident people. Then it's a good thing, because you really know what you're doing. You're passionate. You can talk about it for hours. But nothing against sales, but if you're from sales, and you are confident like every day, and you are selling this stuff to me, and you, sometimes it comes to me as overconfident, maybe because it's the way that they sell it. I cannot tell if it's authentic or not, because they are doing that for the other companies as well. So when they try to sell this company, and especially if it's not a marketing tech company, if it's other tech company, and it just doesn't play well. I think that's a common, I won't say mistake, at least to me, it's a common element, because sometimes you have the CMO or the sales, the chief sales to pitch your company. But it should really be from the, if the tech company, it should really be from the CTO or the CEO. And if you can play both roles really well, then that's the bonus.
I like that, because what you're doing is you're getting a better understanding of the founder. So you're taking time to understand that person. So you're elevating their game by understanding, are they this form of introvert or extrovert? And is this their typical sales cycle, or is this above and beyond? And as you mentioned, when you're talking about something that's generic, if they're shy, but then they dive into their main passion, how passionate they really get. So it's outside their stream. So if you were talking to them and they're already playing Jane on movies, and then you talk to them about their business and they're playing Jane, you probably will feel that it's not really that, they're not really into it. It doesn't really have the legs, maybe because the founder's not as driven for it. But then the founder that really steps up above that, you can kind of see that drive in their eye, and you're looking at this fifth gear, Michael Jordan style, down by 30, and they're going to be able to pull through and win the game by 10. So there's a lot of elements that you're gaining just from that personal one-on-one time, learning about what they're trying to achieve and how they're achieving it.
Exactly. And it's very easy to, by now, I think it's relatively easy to tell. I can give you a story, which was an elementary school of mine. And he was starting a robot company, basically this kind of tiny robots you can stick to on the wall, and you can use Alexa or your cell phone to control it, so you can turn the light on or off. Very basic idea, but he started about 8 years ago, and he started with he was a very nerdy guy, and very into telecommunication, and got into tech university in Singapore and started this company with two of his roommates. So he's very shy, but whenever he talk about telecommunication, about Bluetooth and how they're gonna revolutionize Bluetooth technology, I had no idea. what that is, but he could just be very patient and explain that to me, and was very proud of his capabilities. For example, he won a competition which hacked a satellite, and that satellite, that's a legit hack because the government allowed it. So he was very passionate about it, and I never saw that in his life. And that's what stood out about that company to me.
That's a great story. And you're right. Those are the little extra things that you gain from yourself and the effort you put into something. And it's obviously showing that. So now you're kind of moving through the ecosystem. You've learned a lot from being in the venture space first, which is phenomenal. Then you dove into your first company. Then you went back into IBM and you went in as a product side. So now you've got that commercialization. You started to learn what it takes to bring a product to market. Are there a couple of things that you remember from that time that really stood out on how people should productize their environment or commercialize their sales environment? Are there a couple of tidbits that you would say, hey, if you're going to get into this commercialized side, these are some of the things that IBM looks at and this is how we do this. Anything you can share along those lines?
Yeah, JP. So most co-founders, especially first-time co-founders, underestimate how hard sales is. Sales is basically everything. So don't get me wrong, like you can have the best product in the world, but you don't know how to sell, it's zero. And the hardest sell pitch, hardest customer is always your first customer. And the second hardest is your second customer, etc. Because nobody believes in you, right? You don't have track record. And you have this like banana phone, not Apple phone. And why would I buy a banana phone? It's like nobody bought it. The first question I would ask is there any customer? No, you'll be the first one. Then really takes a leap of faith for me to buy it. And the second customer would say, okay, you at least got one customer. So the game get easier. And I would say prioritize sales. That definitely something. And that's something we look at the founder as well. At least you need to be relatively good at sales. Like first you need to sell yourself, and then you need to sell your story, and then sell the idea of your company, and eventually sell to the customer, right? How to set up the pipeline? I would say what not to do. What not to do is that I hear many pitches. They are saying, we are raising this round so we can find a CMO, so we can find a master of salespeople, and this person will hire more sales, and eventually our sales will be up. Okay, that's a fantasy. Like you have to sell yourself for the first five products at least. If you are enterprise, like for IBM, it's an enterprise seller, so it's basically knocking the doors to for the top 100 vendors. You go one by one. You go to RBC. You say, do you wanna get our latest product? No. Okay, Scotiabank, how about you? And CIBC, like it's just but it's easier for us because we have a list of existing vendors and most of them they just need to renew. But you need to have a very clear sales strategy and KPI. So what I found very helpful in a bigger enterprise like IBM, also in a smaller startup, is that always have your KPI 1 year ahead. So for the first quarter, second quarter, how many customers do you want on board? How many revenues do you want to make? Did you miss it? And once you have those numbers, then you play it backward, right? You want to onboard 100 enterprise customer by the end of the year, then probably 25 per quarter. Then how many? Then maybe 3 per day. And how do you go about that? And then eventually you have a more detailed strategy instead of just hiring a experienced salesperson, because that person won't be committed to your idea, likely. You got to do it yourself to convince other people first.
This is great. And a nice full set of details that really do help you define what enables you as a product company to move to the next stage. And you talked about it, and to take it and reword it a little bit, it is commercialization. It's taking the effects of how do you as an individual sell through, get buy-in, close that second deal, and then learn how this process is working. Dive through the process, set it up, create a new funnel, new structure, before you start diving into spending money on CMOs and everybody else, where their facet of business is great, but it's such a small element to what the product can do and where the product needs to be positioned in order to open the doors to sell more. So I think there's a lot of learning that founders need to take, is that they're the number one salesperson or their co-founder or whoever is in that early five people of that business, they're the ones selling, and they need to be really good at it. And they need to really pay attention to it and work through those processes in order to get through the end, which is commercialization. So that could take 3 years, 5 years, whatever that number is. But it's really, as you mentioned earlier, it's pivoting, it's changing, it's learning where the real problem lies. And then through that process, how you build KPIs and understand how your sales funnel is working so that you can continue to build on that before you start bringing lots of people in or heads of groups when you haven't even figured out what the real clean process is to commercialize this sale.
Exactly, JP. And if I can expand a little bit, it would be once you have a standard pipeline, once you have the product, that just never ending iteration, right? But once you have a kind of a final product, you can afford to hire a team, you gotta give very good incentive to the salespeople, right? I don't know, but always commission-based. That's my experience. Sometimes you can give 50% of the sales to them, depending on the maturity of your company, right? The earlier, the more commission, and depend on the nature of your company. But treat them really well, because I still firmly believe that a product is good, but sales is basically the engine of the company.
Agreed. It is the engine. So now you've shifted, you've gone into, you created your next company, and you're just getting ready to jump back into venture. You create this new company, and you shared a great story with me a while back, and maybe we can iterate on the story, but you can dive into it, because I think it's a great story for founders on what it takes to really get that first customer or get proof that your product fits the market. And I remember you sharing that one of the things that you did was you literally went and stood in front of a Home Depot and started trying to check people into your product and get people to like what they did. And you learned a lot from that process. You learned that people didn't like this process. You learned what they did like, until you eventually got people to start signing up and going through the whole extent of the program. But there was learnings on two sides. There was, how am I going to get people interested in the product? And two, how do I iterate on my product so that I could keep making it easier and more functional for the people that are going to use it? Are there a couple of things in that story that you can elaborate on that founders can think about when they're really at that early infancy of building their company that they should think about doing?
Yes, JP, that was a very interesting period of my life. So context, right? We were doing company which was an AI powered interior design company. So basically, JP, you can tell I want to, you know, design my bedroom, and I have two kids and I have a pet, and I want this to be modern with a minimalism. You can throw in keywords like ChatGPT, and then bam, that's a 40 renovated bedroom, exactly looking like your bedroom, except all the, you know, all the renovations. And all the materials will be shipped to a warehouse, and we will match a contractor. And then you can book a day, and this person will bring all the materials to your home and renovate that room or the entire basement, depending on your scope. It's a software, and it's very hard to sell. Basically, why would people use it? Existing companies use AutoCAD already, and they have very professional drawings. And smaller companies that just go in your bedroom and they use, you know, tape to measure it and use a paper, a pen, and end the story. Like, you can just get a set of new floors. So we are really targeting the small, medium contractors. We call them subcontractors, and they don't have the ability to use AutoCAD. And they also, they have a lot of projects, and it's very hard to manage all of them. So for us, to answer your question, we first approach our friends who are very close to us, who are actually contractors. Say, hey, Mr. John, do you want to use this product? And they always say the nicest thing about the product. So, yeah, of course we will use it. It looks amazing. Can we try it? And okay, that's a good start, right? But eventually you find out, okay, people are just saying nice things about you because they don't want to hurt your feelings. And it's very hard to tell that sometimes even you tell them, like just give one bad thing about the software and they'll just, you know, kind of soft land that question. And say, yeah, no, you know, takes a little bit longer to load, which is not the hardest defect there. And then we realize it's probably good to get feedback from strangers. And how do we get strangers? And eventually I think it's one of the salesperson suggested to us that, you know what, most of the contractors, they go to Home Depot every morning at 9 a.m. because they open at 9 a.m. And as a contractor, you got to go there early. Otherwise, it's going to be crowded. And we just tried it. I still remember that we used the Google Map. And we tried to use the Home Depot API to find the, you know, all the Home Depots within the 50 kilometer diameter. And then they don't have this API. So we have to like manually search them and put them in a Google Sheet. And we go to, I still remember the first Home Depot was at Markham. I went with the head of sales. And our head of sales was a female. So she's very good at looking and recognizing who is a contractor and who is not. So say like no stereotyping, but he can always get it right. Okay, look at that pickup truck. Let's go there. And we just wait beside the pickup truck. And when they come out, we give them, say, hey, we introduce ourselves and we show them a 1 minute video. Say, we're doing this to help contractors. Can you give us honest feedback? And surprisingly, most of them were actually nice, friendly. Instead of, like, of course, there are a few people who are very busy, but most of them, they want to spend a minute, look at the scene and say, okay, this sucks. You need to do A, B, and C. Or yes, it's not that bad. And if it's not that bad, we will ask them, invite them to our office for a free lesson on how to use it. And we can connect them to potential customer. And that's how it got started. We spent 100 mornings doing that, just that, 1 hour, 9 to 10 a.m. And eventually we got into Home Depot. We tried to partner with Home Depot, but I think they only partner with established brands, like the floor brands, not software companies. I think they never done it before. Anyway, so we just, they don't mind us going in and ask customers because that's not, that's acceptable. So we did that. We got our most valuable feedback from that 100 mornings. And given that I was a product person, I was a firm believer that the best product priorities and the features should be directly coming from the customers. And I think we prioritized 10 features out of that 100 mornings, and we eventually implement them, iterate them every 3 weeks. So not the 100 days, it's not that we are showing them the exact same software. Every day is a little bit different. And sometimes we do A-B testing actually, and see which one you like. We spend a little on marketing, but mostly, you know, you need to get this 1 minute video. You don't want to shoot a 5 minutes video. They won't look at it. But that's a hell of a learning experience to me.
It's a great, great story because it does share what it takes, the grit that it takes to start a business. But I like the fact that you kept using the 100 days. You put a benchmark and you did it every single day. So you made sure you were there. You learned. People probably saw you 4, 5, 6, 10, 30 times. And eventually they probably did talk to you. And I think that's a great testament to what it takes as a product founder, as a person building a business, what you needed to do to get people to believe, look, and give you feedback. But I'm sure a lot of them ended up trying it. And as you said, the business has gone on to be successful. So those are all great pieces that help you build a company and great knowledge to share for other founders. So just before we kind of pivot into the next phase of our podcast, the last question I'll kind of ask is, now taking all of these learnings, you've jumped into New Billionaires Club and your accelerator. Maybe you can share a little bit more on how the accelerator side works and what you're looking to do with the New Billionaires Club by minting out more billionaires.
Yeah, right on. So for us, We are venture capital first, and we invest in early stage companies. Check size is 50 to 500K normally. And we also have an incubator branch, which is called New Billionaires Club. We offer mentorship. We offer services, resources. And we see most of our executives, they were entrepreneurs themselves, been there, done that. And they knew how it's going to be like. And they knew the common mistakes people make. And they know the best ways to go after your project. So you can think of us as we are not a rigid incubator. So we don't have like 3 months, 6 months program. We are more like a loosely organized incubator. You can come in, if you have questions, you can book a time to talk to one of our mentors, our specialist. And if you want to meet investors, you can come in as well and tell me like what kind of investors do you want to meet? And I can arrange that. If you're good enough, we can arrange that in a demo day. And we have a lot of social events, which serves no purpose, just networking. You come in for a cocktail and maybe, you know, you can meet some people amazing like you or an investor who happened to like your idea.
That's great. I love it. And I like that it does have that casual side too, but it works with the time period of the founders and of course the community. So great to hear. So we're going to kind of pivot now into a couple of questions, and you did share a story. So I'm going to have you maybe share maybe another case study of what you see that it takes to be a founder. And obviously you shared what it takes to be a founder from your own perspective. If you have anything else you want to share along those lines, we just want to really help entrepreneurs better understand what it takes to get into this space.
Yes. I would say the best, of course, like you got to be the most knowledgeable person in the domain, at least the top 1%, right, in order to start a business. But also that's another trait I really value, which is persistency. So I mentioned that in our demo day. The best co-founders I met this year, and of course, past years as well, but this year particularly, they were so persistent. Like not only they believe in their ideas, but they go an extra mile to just everything. They go well and beyond. Like for the fundraising part, they will go up and beyond. They will follow up more frequently. They will, you know, do all sorts of things to make sure you know them. Through friends, through connections. So that's one thing I kind of admire. And also we talk about the sales part. They're very persistent at sales. So they don't really rest. Like they go they work on this project 24/7, and they have a lot of insights from those sales. And for the two companies I invested in earlier part of this year, they were all serial entrepreneurs. So they've been there. One person failed twice and it's his third time. And the other person actually succeeded the first time and it's the second time. But just persistent, like their whole life was doing startups. So those kind of things, I think they manifest in a lot of successful founders. I'm not saying like if it's a bad idea, you should always pursue that. I'm saying you believe this is the right direction and you're willing to pivot, but always believe in yourself and persist.
No, that's great. Well shared. Is there anything you can share around the toughest lesson you've learned as an investor?
Okay, toughest lesson I learned as an investor is... It's not easy to, I think that applies both to co-founders and to investors. It's very hard to admit your own mistake. As an investor, I make more mistakes than as an entrepreneur, because as an entrepreneur, you're focused on one business. As an investor, you're looking at 500,000 companies a year, and you will make mistake. So that's why I always rely on not myself, but always rely on a team, and on a team of not only my partners, but also industry experts. And yeah, I guess the because I can share this, like after I graduated MBA from Columbia, I was very confident at investing, like why not, right? And I look at the financials and I thought to myself, okay, I can understand this, and you are doing this wrong, this right. Like I'm using this consulting, you know, McKinsey thinking framework, and you can do this, you can do that, but actually it's not that at all. Like it gotta be from the experts. So say if I'm investing in a property tech companies, which I don't know a lot about, I will always ask at least 10 experts who done that for more than 30 years. They build condos, they bought hotels, and they know exactly what they are doing. And if I bring this business to them, then I make less mistakes. So that's, I learned it from, I think, overconfidence after my MBA, and slowly I'm picking up and be more realistic with my ability.
Again, that's a great sharing, because you're leveraging your shortcomings to better improve yourself and admitting that you have shortcomings, and this is what's allowing you to move forward. So you're going to the experts in the space because you have an interest to invest. So you're admitting what those shortcomings are, at least you're learning them and you know what they are, and you're going after it. So it's a great way to circumvent any future investments so that you continue to make great investments by leveraging the advisors and the mentors, which is what you shared even from a co-founder or a startup side, was, you know, you might be the smartest person in the room, but bring in the more experience around you, because that's what's going to help you make better choices and decisions.
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect. We're going to jump into the 60-second rant. This is my favorite section of the podcast. So here's how it works. I'm going to time it on my phone. You've got 60 seconds to rant about your favorite subject or something that I guess upsets you, bothers you about the environment or anything you want to talk about in the world. We'll time it 60 seconds. I will counter it with one counter, and then you finish it off with your final thoughts. If you're ready to go, I'm going to start the clock. And you've got 60 seconds. Ready?
Ready, yeah.
You're on.
Yeah, so I want to rant about AIGC. I want to rant about ChatGPT because there's too much hype around it. Like, to be honest, I've seen at least 200 decks about AIGC plus whatever. But sometimes people forget the whatever part is more important. So AI has been here forever, like since, I don't know, 20 years ago. Since IBM could beat a chess player 30 years ago, actually. So why now? Probably because OpenAI and ChatGPT and a lot of companies come in with a very high valuation for the idea, but it's actually just ChatGPT plus something actually doesn't matter or matters. So my advice is that get rid of the GPT part and evaluate that if the idea is really worth it. And I guess that's my biggest rant for the first 6 months of this year, JP.
That's a good rant. So I'm going to counter it by saying, but don't you find that ChatGPT and the AI platforms have elevated AI to be on the forefront of the fastest moving technology? And prior to that, it was kind of all over the place. Some were doing AI, some were just doing matching algorithms. Like they were talking, it was AI. But today, ChatGPT is really kind of honed in on what AI really can do and what it means. Or do you feel it's still matching the same issue, which is people don't understand what AI is, and now they're just bucketing everything under AI because it has to have it in order for anything to operate or function today?
Yeah, JP, I believe AI plays a key role, right, in our society. And AI basically is just more complex algorithms that is still code, but it's mimicking a human mind. It has this, you know, three layers of learning, machine learning. But does it address the fundamental problem. Like, I can give you an example. One company was doing Web3 2020 and it was very popular. And then the Web3, it's no longer hot this year. And then it's Web3 plus AIGC. I think sometimes people pivot for the sake of pivoting and doing AIGC for the sake of doing AIGC. And you can tell that easily. But if it's really something that you can benefit from AIGC, then great. And maybe right now it's a time because of the, it's a chicken and the egg problem. Like AIGC has so much potential, but didn't get enough money. And then one day OpenAI got enough capital and boom, otherwise we would have to wait another 5 years, right? So why not use this opportunity to really make your startup along the journey faster? If it's something relevant, if it's not, if you want use AIGC to buy more Bitcoin, I'm not saying that's not possible, but that's just for the sake of doing it, to do it. And personally, I don't quite get it, but maybe it's just my lack of knowledge.
It's a great rant, and I think it aligns perfectly to the way the world's looking at things right now, is that everybody's always rushing to not be part of the FOMO and lose out, that they want to change and shift and pivot to something that has more bling and value to it so that they can garner more eyeballs and attract more dollars. But the real thing comes down to is, are they really solving a problem? And is this problem large enough from a market size? And is this solvable enough that people are going to jump into it and want to utilize your product for it? So make sure you're solving a problem.
Right. And if 10 years later, just company doing Web3 plus AIGC became a unicorn, don't hate me for this.
I like it. I agree. All right. We're going to jump into our segment two, which is we're going to dive into rapid fire questions. So pick one or the other, and we're just going to rifle through these. So these are investment. You're the investor. And these are the questions associated with you choosing one or the other as the investor. So here we go. Founder or co-founder?
Co-founder.
Unicorn or a four-year 10x exit?
Four-year 10x exit.
Tech or CPG?
Tech.
NFTs or Web 3.0?
Neither.
I knew you were going to say that. AI or blockchain?
AI.
First-time founder or second, third-time founder?
Second, third-time, fourth-time better.
Okay. First money in or Series A?
First money in.
Angel or VC?
VC.
Board seat or observer?
Observer.
Safe or convertible note?
Convertible note.
Lead or follow?
Depends, but follow.
Okay. Number of companies invested per year?
5 to 10.
Favorite part of investing?
Get to see the person's life journey and what they're thinking and following their dream.
Verticals of focus?
IoT, hard tech.
Okay. All right, now we're going to go into some more. These are more questions. Again, we'll try to keep them rapid fire. What's one piece of advice you would give founders 9 out of 10 times?
Believe in yourself.
What tech will define the world in the next 5 years?
Next 5 years. Correct. I believe it's computing power because if I can expand a little bit, because I still believe in the technology of blockchain. I'm not a particular fan of crypto, but I'm a big fan of blockchain. And also I'm a big fan of AI and AIGC, if it's done right. And both of them require a lot of computing power. So I believe in, if somebody can come up with a technology that can gather or can increase the computing power right now by tenfold, that's gotta be an increasing trend.
I like it. Who is your hero, mentor, and why?
My hero would be, is it like someone I met or someone I haven't met?
Anybody. It's your choice. Whoever you believe in and supports you and all that good stuff.
I would say my first manager at the VC. He told me to get an MBA, otherwise I won't go anywhere in the VC world.
Perfect. No, that's good. What is your biggest fear or phobia in the business startup workspace ecosystem?
Nobody wants to do startup anymore. They just want to go to RBC or IBM after graduation, and nobody wants to. Nobody believes in startup can be very successful. I hope Canada won't be a place like that. I hope the spirit of entrepreneurship will thrive here.
Okay. All right, last question in this one. What is your worst or your toughest investment you've made to date? And you don't have to name names, just learning that you gained from it.
Toughest meaning?
Expand.
Meaning what?
Like you're, from an investment standpoint, is there something that you could take back, you wish you did differently on anything that you've done in the past? Just kind of like a quick case study.
Many years ago, I invested in a company I didn't really believe in, but it was a very good friend, so I still invested a small amount, and later I thought that was not good. It's okay to be an angel investor, but if you're doing VC, don't ever do that. It's not responsible for other investors.
Fair, that's a good point of view. I like that. All right, personal question. Same as the first, which is your personal pick one or the other.
Okay.
Most famous person that pops in your mind?
Elon Musk.
First brand that pops in your mind?
LV.
Which one?
Louis Vuitton.
Oh, nice, oh. Nice. Book or movie?
Movie.
Superman or Batman?
Batman.
Fortune cookie or birthday cake?
Birthday cakes.
5 minutes with Bezos or Oprah?
Bezos.
Mountain or beach?
Beach.
Bike or run?
Run.
Big Mac or Chicken McNuggets?
Chicken McNuggets.
Trophy or money?
Money.
Beer or wine?
Why?
TED Talk or book reading?
TED Talk.
TikTok or Instagram?
TikTok, 100%.
Facebook or LinkedIn?
No, neither.
Okay. Favorite movie and what character would you play?
Titanic. And I play Rose. Actually, I'm a guy, but I love the character of Rose.
That's awesome. Love it. Favorite book?
Great Gatsby.
Oh, nice. Favorite sports team?
Blue Jay.
Yeah, I like the Blue Jays. All right, we're almost there. What is the meaning of success to you?
That's a big question, JP. Meaning of success can mean a lot of things, but to me, it's about the community. So I hope everybody who will be successful can kind of contribute back to the community. I guess Silicon Valley did it really well. That's why there's a thriving startup community and the VC system there. And I believe Toronto is becoming one. But that actually needs everybody's energy and time, like more people like JP, more people, more angel investors and more, startups. And we can do this together.
I love it. Agree with you. Last question. What's your superpower?
My superpower is that I don't ever argue with my wife. That's my superpower.
That's a great superpower. You're logical and you have discussions and communicate. Well said. Well said. I feel the same. We've had lots of great conversations. I've been part of your events, and I do 100% support the fact that you're a visionary and you have a very good understanding of balance. And I think that shows in the product that you deliver. So I want to say thank you very much for joining us today. And the way that we like to end our show, Daniel, is that we like to give you the last word. So anything you want to share to the investor community and to the startups, I turn it over to you, but I want to thank you again for all of your time and sharing all the valuable insights. I've taken lots of notes. They're all over my page. And I could write a book, but thank you, man. It has been very much received, very appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, JP. I guess my last remark is that I really appreciate you inviting me to this podcast. I think we are doing exactly the right things to the Toronto entrepreneurship community. So for me, I just wish more people who are watching this just come forward. If you are doing a stop, feel free to come to New Business Club and ask for opinions. And also OPN, it's also a great platform. I believe we are in this together, be entrepreneurs or investors. And yeah, let's do it and make the community better together.
I love it. Thank you very much, Daniel. And just for the notes, if people want to get a hold of you, can you share your email or where the best spot is to connect with you?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Daniel, last name's XU, and you can easily find me there and shoot me a message.
Perfect, we'll do that. Daniel, have a fantastic day and thank you very much for all your time today.
Thank you so much, JG.
Well, that's a great conversation with Daniel. And there was a few things that really stood out, of course, that we've talked about, and I'll reiterate all about the whole, they were very convincing, but I wasn't so convinced. So just keep that in mind, that there is a lot of things that you have to do in order to convince people that your product or your business is the right one that people want to invest in, buy, or use. The other side, it was, you know, being confident and really getting behind it, and people can see through what is real and what's not real. So that confidence comes with a good value and a bad value. And obviously the people are looking through that, and that's what they're going to learn. Make sure you have a lot of knowledgeable people in there propping you up as well. And you mentioned a couple of things, which was really fascinating, is that, you know, if your professor joined your company, that shows that they're willing to risk everything to be part of this business because of it's so such a strong value. What it takes to be inside of a business, that 100 mornings, every morning they went out and pitched in front of Home Depot. Brilliant. Sales isn't easy, but you need to sell. Sell your first, your second, your third customer. And then once you've built that process, build customization, build in KPIs, keep it clear, keep it a clean strategy. Do this, figure out where you're going to be in a year, and then just keep reiterating and build on it. You know, admit your mistakes, work off your mistakes, learn from it. Go back, reanalyze, figure out, and move forward and build a really strong team. But don't go after the CMOs. Don't do the things that aren't going to bring you the value you need today. Build the team now that gets you in the market, selling, and making money. So thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please feel free to share with your friends, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and or please follow us on Spotify, Apple, and or Stitcher podcast platforms. I believe Stitcher is actually going to be shutting down. So there are lots of other great opportunities to jump into others. So feel free to share an audio or video clip around our show, and we may include it on one of our future podcasts. You can also follow us at marketing@openpeoplenetwork.com and or at LinkedIn at Supporters Fund. Your support and comments are truly appreciated. Please visit us at supportersfund.com or startup events at openpeoplenetwork.com. Thank you and have a fantastic day.